We conclude our talk with Rich Moseson of CQ Magazine in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the Mid-South studio of the Radio Amateur Information Network, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR. This week we conclude Hap Holly, KC9RP's conversation with Rich Moseson, W2VU, editor of CQ Magazine since 1999. CQ recently announced the re-release of Don Miller, W9WNV's DX Handbook, originally published by CQ in 1968.
It occurred to me that when you were talking about a book that was published 50 years ago about DXing, that yes, while things have changed technologically, that it still requires the same listening skills, the same timing, the same patience and perseverance it always did.
That's right, and that's why a book like Don's DX Handbook will continue to be valuable today. It's long been said that the best computer and best receiver that a ham has access to is the one between his ears. And that continues to be the case. Obviously, with some of the newer digital technologies, such as JT65 or FT8, where they can decode signals that are beneath the noise level that the average person listening can't even hear, let alone make out the meaning. That doesn't apply. But when you're talking traditional single sideband or CW DXing, which is still 95% probably of it, especially when you're dealing with DX expeditions, then those same skills are still required. They haven't changed. The concept of understanding propagation as best you can, which has gotten to be a little easier with the technology today, to know when you'll have the best bet of contacting a particular place on the globe and at what band, at what time, when those bands wake up, if you can work at gray line, things like that, those still apply. How to get your call heard, even, you know, if you're not running a kilowatt and a huge Yagi antenna. Techniques for operating, basic techniques, you know, that people still don't get today. A lot of DX expeditions, for example, operate split so that they don't have this huge agglomeration of people in one spot on the band. And split for the uninitiated means that they listen on a different frequency from which they're transmitting, and they usually spread those out a little bit so that you have people calling over a range of, say, 5 to 10 kilohertz that is shifted up or down 5 or 10 kilohertz from where the DX station is transmitting. Everybody can still hear the DX station, otherwise they'll be stepping on them, and they're not all calling on the exact same frequency at the same time. A lot of people don't understand this technique and don't understand how to make it work in their favor. And these are the kinds of things that don't really change with technology. They're the kinds of skills and techniques and mindset that we try to get across in this book.
If you'll grab your crystal ball and give it a good rub, what do you foresee coming down the pipe 5, 10 years from now, Rich?
You know, it's very interesting. I was just writing about this in my October editorial, which we just wrapped up the October issue now. We're seeing the beginnings of a change in how hams can help in emergencies and disasters. One of the fascinating things about Hurricane Harvey is probably the worst flooding disaster in American history. It affected a huge population center. Houston is the fourth largest city in the United States. And you didn't see very much about hams providing emergency communications. And the reason for that is that after Hurricane Ike back in 2008, the public safety people and the telecommunications people put a lot of effort and money into hardening their systems. The systems did not go down by and large. The public safety access points or 911 centers, the worst of the storm, one 911 center was down without having an automatic relay to a backup location. Only one. There were several others that were down but had automatic relays, so those calls were still being handled. I think 95% of cell sites in the affected area stayed up. Our motto has been for a long time, when all else fails, amateur radio. It's still valid. But what happened here was all else didn't fail. The regular communication systems, both for the public safety people and for cell phones and the internet, stayed basically intact. I think we're going to see this happening more and more. Does this mean that we no longer have a role in emergency communications? I don't think so. I think that our role is going to change and evolve. There are still things that we can provide that you can't do with a cell phone or with trunked systems, for example. You know, we can have the benefit of one transmission being heard by everybody on a net. We can provide interoperability that may otherwise be very difficult to provide. You know, you had people coming from all over the country to help in Houston, as you have in every other major disaster that we face, and they're all on different frequencies and they all have different codes and they can't talk to each other very easily. And there's efforts to be able to get around this, but it's still very difficult. And it's going to be a long time before those systems are put into place and active. So ham radio will continue to have a role there, connecting people from different agencies in different parts of the country with each other, even if they're all in the same geographic area to respond to a disaster. So our role in emergency communications is going to be evolving. It's going to be changing. And we're seeing the beginnings of that now. Where exactly it'll end up, I'm not sure.
You're listening to the thoughts of Rich Moseson, W2VU, editor of CQ Magazine since 1999. We'll conclude Hapali, KC9RP's Minutes with Rich, in a moment. This is The Rain Report, the weekly podcast of the Radio Amateur Information Network. Available from therainreport.com, iTunes, and various shortwave stations. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Rain Report from www.therainreport.com.
Our October issue is also our annual emergency communications special. And one of the articles we have on there is about video conferencing over HF, using a digital video technology that is considerably faster than slow scan TV, so that you don't have one frame every 30 seconds as you do it with slow scan. I think you have something like 10 or 12 frames per minute. So it's not full motion video, but it's enough to be able to carry on a real-time discussion with pictures over HF. And this could be something that could be very handy for being able to communicate with a regional center or a state capital or something like that. There are lots of ways that we can continue to provide help and continue to be innovative in doing what we do so well and have done historically for 100 years now. But the way we do it and the specifics of it are starting to change. Other things looking ahead, obviously, digital is continuing to grow and will continue to grow. You're seeing more and more digital voice, particularly on VHF and UHF, with all of these different systems that aren't compatible with each other at the moment. System Fusion, D-Star, DMR, there's a whole bunch of them. And right now, you can talk to other people within that system, but you can't go between them very well. That's going to get figured out at some point so that you have crossovers possible. Each of those has its distinct advantages and disadvantages, and the marketplace will work out what's going to be the predominant mode as those continue to develop. Traditional single sideband and CW are still going to be here for a long time. You know, CW it's been 10 years now since the FCC dropped the code test requirement, and CW is not showing any signs of going away. In fact, participation in RCW contests is as high as ever, if not higher. If you listen to the bands, you'll find that there are more and more people who are learning code and sending slowly. You don't have novice bands anymore for people to get on and practice on in a specific area. So they're kind of spread across the general CW portion of the band. And you have concerted efforts underway by various groups like CW Operators or FIST to help people who are interested learn the code, get practice on the air. It's been fascinating that the interest in it has grown when it changed from being viewed as an obstacle, as an exam requirement, to a challenge that you can do at your own pace in your own time. But the interest in learning and using CW continues to grow and will continue. Kit building will continue to grow. You know, there's more and more integration between ham radio and the maker movement because we have a lot in common, and that's going to continue to grow. Those are the things that come to mind right away in terms of looking toward the future.
Interesting about the maker movement. I had never heard of that before last March, and I did a
piece. You should read CQ more often. Because we had a maker column quite a ways back, and probably 6-7 years ago now, which when our columnist left to do other things, we decided not to continue because so many of our columns already do maker things. We've been talking about the maker movement for coming up on 10 years now.
It's been fascinating following the maker movement. Speaking of kit building, the Rain Report is featuring a talk by Joe Eisenberg at the Hamvention on what I'm calling kit building refresher. He's a good speaker, and you can tell he loves the kit building, and that's a great thing. And gosh, the fact that he's had a column doing that since 2008 is a real testament to him, to CQ.
Well, I'd like to think that Joe's column in CQ has played a role in the rebirth of the popularity of kit building and continued growth of that part of the hobby.
And that concludes our time with Rich Moseson, W2VU, editor of CQ Magazine since 1999. He was interviewed by Rain's Hap Holly, KC9RP, via Skype in August 2017. The Rain Report is copyright 1990-2017 Rain. All rights are reserved. Now for you DXers and DXpeditioners, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, bidding you very 73 from the Radio Amateur Information Network. www.therainreport.com. Keep on hamming.